Oh, hey guys, welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Sean.
Thanks. Good to be here.
See, I got some bad news for you.
Oh, no, I hate bad news.
Okay, well, you're going to hate this then, because you know how Drake is kind of a friend of the show. We use him on the podcast a lot for his beats and stuff.
For his sick beats?
Well, I'm not sure we can use Drake anymore.
Why not?
Why? Yeah.
Okay, so while you were gone, the Milwaukee Bucks were in the playoffs. They were playing against the Toronto Raptors. Drake is apparently a huge Toronto Raptors fan. He's on the sideline at games. And when I say on the sideline, he's like on the sideline. He's giving the Raptors coach a little back rub. He's laughing at Giannis as he misses a free throw. He's talking smack to the Milwaukee Bucks. It was ugly.
Sounds like Drake and Wisconsin are engaging in a classic beef.
Totally.
Yeah, totally. You know, actually, it seems like there have been some beefs brewing in Wisconsin politics while we were gone, too.
Oh, yeah. Big time beef.
Well, why don't we talk about it? This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, let's talk about some beefs in Wisconsin state politics.
Bricklayers in ball shorts, coaching from the side of the ball court. If you know, you know. One stop like a Walmart. We got the tennis balls for the wrong sport. You know, you know.
If you know about the... Well, that was Pusha T with his song, If You Know, You Know. We're featuring that song, of course, because Pusha T and Drake have a notable beef that's been going on for several years now.
And during the playoffs game that was back in Milwaukee, the daughter of the owner of the Bucks, one of the owners of the Bucks, wore a shirt with Pusha T's face on it to express her displeasure.
With Drake.
With Drake.
Does this mean that Pusha T is now a friend of the pod? Is that how that works?
I don't know. I still like Drake better, guys.
Yeah.
No, I'll say Sean. It. I don't care for his attitude. I think it's unsportsmanlike, but I like his beats a little bit better.
Yeah.
Says Dad Sean Johnson.
Like hip hop critic.
Old man Sean. I'll be a blurb on his next album. Old man Sean Johnson says, I like his beats better than Pusha T.
His freshest beats
are by Kanye, so really you're insulting Kanye too.
I'm okay with that.
No problem there.
So anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about though. As much as Sean could go on forever about Drake.
Or just beats in general. It's my life, man.
We're going to talk about beefs, not
That's
beats.
That's right, beefs. Yeah. We definitely have a beef going here at the Capitol, guys. I feel like.
We do.
I feel like it's risen past the, you know, this just the normal Democrat-Republican sniping to we're like at beef-level fighting.
Yeah. So can I just tell you a little bit about my perspective of this beef from across the pond?
Okay, sure.
Mm-hmm. So
Laurel traveled.
I traveled during my breakaway from the pod. And I get, you know, obviously you still check Twitter and email occasionally. And I saw this alert come up that said essentially that the governor's office was calling the two leaders of the Assembly and Senate sexist. And I was like, things are happening back in Wisconsin. I was like, how? It really gave me pause. So it was one of the first things I asked you about when I got back.
Yeah.
I was like, what's going on with that? So can you walk everybody through it?
Sure.
Kind of like you did for me, I guess. Because it really is kind of, I'm gesturing a lot. Clearly I'm out of practice of podcasting if I'm just gesturing a lot.
Yeah. Well, you sort of stole my story there, so thanks. And
I'm out of practice.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, yeah. the setup is important here because it was at the State Republican Party. And at the Republican Party, Republicans get up on stage and they trash Democrats. And they trash Tony Evers in particular. But during this segment with legislative leaders, with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, Fitzgerald is saying, there's no point person. There's no one that reaches out to the legislature on a regular basis. There's no one that we have any confidence in. So that afternoon, the governor's office, spokeswoman Melissa Baldoff, sends an email and says that Voss and Fitzgerald are to blame for their reluctance to deal with Evers' chief of staff, Maggie Gao. She said, quote, the governor has communicated repeatedly to GOP leadership that they should work with his chief of staff, just like they did under the previous governor. The directive wasn't confusing to them when the chief of staff was a man, Voss and Fitzgerald are clearly uncomfortable or simply unwilling to work with a leadership team made up entirely of women. Strong words.
Yeah,
right?
It really gave me pause, as I mentioned. And I think what's kind of interesting about this, if you sort of take a step back and look at it in a little bit more context, is this is sort of an evolution of a fight that's been happening between the leaders and the governor's office for a while. This is just, it kind of took a different twist. Because they've been talking, leaders have been talking specifically for months now about how the governor won't meet with them, how the governor isn't in touch with them, how lines of communication really aren't open, and they've sort of been pointing their finger at him and saying, like, he's not making it possible for us to compromise. And so I think maybe in this instance where they're up on the stage at the convention, they got a little bit more specific in a way, sort of saying, like, there's no point person.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's kind of standing in the way of us having these conversations, right? And then it sort of spiraled into this whole new thing.
It was fast and very, very directly calling them sexist there. Yeah. I mean, she didn't use the word they are sexist, you know, but...
That's what all the headlines said.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what she was doing. So Voss responds that day in a tweet and points out that leaders on his own staff are women. He says, quote, Chief of Staff Jenny Toughness, Communications Director Kit Beyer, Policy Director Heather Smith, Eberstaff, clueless. And then Melissa Baldoff responds with a tweet and says, you know, great way to respond to sexism claims by calling people clueless. So it continued there for a while, as Twitter fights sometimes do.
So it seems like things were sort of escalating quickly there, and it's not where it ended either.
No, so... I feel like it escalated even more the next week when Assembly Speaker Voss takes to Twitter to go after Governor Tony Evers. And this was about an instance where National Guard troops were coming back from a deployment and they were going to meet up with their families again. Evers was there to meet with them. Voss says in a tweet, quote, heard from one of the troops that you made those that landed first wait hours for the second plane after being gone almost a year so you could greet them all together and save you time. That didn't happen. So the Journal Sentinel looked into this, spoke to a Republican lawmaker who was there at the time, spoke to the National Guard, and it was just factually inaccurate. Voss actually walks it back and ends up saying, it appears what was reported to us was wrong. Glad that Governor Evers did the right thing and didn't make them wait as we were told he would. Now, what you didn't hear in there was an apology for saying, you know, that the governor did this, but another example of this escalating. To me, this is escalated beyond the usual attacks.
I mean, they're not beefing about policy per se either. That's something that sort of stands out to me.
No.
Their beefs are somewhat personal and or like, you know, beyond like, you're fiscally unconservative. Oh, you're, right. You know, corporate-minded and favor the rich. Like, those are sort of your usual partisan attacks.
We expect those. Mm-hmm. Those are, like, part of the job. They are kind of expected in 2019 to say that stuff about the other party. This is not, like, 19-whatever Wisconsin when both parties worked together. I don't know when it happened. I've never quite seen it, but...
Was it in the 19s?
Yeah, no. Maybe, yeah. Allegedly, that happened.
There was some time there.
But these have escalated. And so I guess the reason that we're talking about it, beyond it being interesting, and we like beefs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is our life. Beef is in our blood.
Is the question of whether it affects policy. Like, whether this animosity that they seem to have toward each other right now is actually going to affect the state budget, the largest bill that they, you know, deal with every couple years. Could this affect that document? And I think maybe it could.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't think it's really a hot take to say, like, this has become, and politics in general have sort of become more personal. It's more like personal attacks about people's character than it used to be. And sort of when you're doing that kind of thing and setting that sort of tone, what kind of ground are you on when you head into a meeting where you're talking about these fundamental differences and trying to find kind of a middle place to meet on things like, you know, somebody wants to spend $1.4 billion on education, somebody wants to spend $500 million. What incentive do you have to kind of give and take, and, you know, because these are hard conversations. They're hard compromises to strike. And if you're not motivated or engaged with the person that you're negotiating with, that makes it harder, right?
Yeah. If you're not starting out at a place of, I differ with this person across the table from me, but I like them.
Right. I respect them. I respect that their position is just, you know, we just have sort of an ideological difference here, but we both want what's best, what we think is best. That's not the kind of language that's being thrown around. It's not like, there isn't an underpinning of respect, I don't think.
So what has the governor said, or Speaker Voss, or Majority Leader Fitzgerald said specifically about the budget in this climate of beefage?
Well, I think you just kind of look at what they're passing, and that's sort of speaking for them, because they've said bad things about the Evers budget since it was introduced, before it was introduced, but now they're voting on it piece by piece in the Finance Committee. So we look at what they voted on. Governor Evers' budget was built around this $1.4 billion increase for K-12 schools. They gave them $500 million. It's $900 million difference between the two. Governor Evers wanted to spend about $130 million more on the University of Wisconsin system. They gave them about $58 million. So pretty sizable difference between the two. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting when they passed the K-12 school budget, Senator Luther Olson, who I would say every budget that I covered where Governor Walker was the governor and Senator Olson was, you know, in the legislature, it was always Olson versus Walker. Olson wanted more school funding, mm-hmm. more per pupil than Walker was going to give. And that was sort of the relationship then. Olson said about this budget to Governor Evers, this is good as it's going to get. Basically, he's saying, yeah. I've seen what's in this room, you know, and trust me, even if you get more, it won't be worth it in the end. Like he's saying,
what does that mean?
That's a good question. And I think what he's saying is that if you were going to have a budget where the governor got more for K-12 education, that might be the type of, you might have budget negotiations dragging into the fall. Mm-hmm. And Olson is actually saying school districts want certainty here. And if you just pass this, they'll be happy with the per pupil increase of $200 in the first year, $204 in the second year, mm-hmm. and the first increase in special ed funding in a decade.
Right. Versus going into the year and not having a new budget. Because that's something that the governor has talked about a lot, sort of that deadline for the budget not being the deadline that's on paper that we've talked about a lot, but a deadline that impacts the beginning of the school year and school funding. And sort of how that makes it difficult for those institutions to operate comfortably when they have this sort of like hazy future.
And I've only covered one of those budgets once. And I can tell you like the whole thing was, you know, is then Democratic Governor Jim Doyle blaming Assembly Republicans and mm-hmm. them blaming Doyle. It's like, it's your fault that the schools don't know what's going on. And they're like, no, it's your fault. And it just kind of boiled up to a certain date in October, mm-hmm. and somebody finally decided, let's negotiate. Mm-hmm. So that's one way they could go. Or Senator Olson is saying,
take the $500 million.
That's
what
he's saying.
Increase.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing to mention there, so Olson saying, take the $500 million. The governor was on WPR this week, actually, and was talking to one of our talk shows and said, the $500 million is less than they gave Governor Walker. He got $636 million in increase in K-12. So obviously, I think he's sort of pointing to that and saying, like, I realize that I'm asking for an even bigger increase than that, the $1.4 billion. But if they can give $636 million to Walker, why can't they give me something a little bit closer to $1.4 billion? And he said, I realize that there are some politics at play here in terms of them maybe not wanting to give me what I asked for. But I think he's obviously not. Newsflash, he's not happy with the $500 million.
Yeah, the state does have more money to work with it now than it did in that last budget when Walker increased school funding by a larger amount. Mm-hmm. So that's what Governor Evers is saying. You know, even if you take away his tax increases, which they did in the finance process anyway, that there's new revenue growth, and then there's this kind of like one-time revenue that the state's getting as a result of tax law changes, and they could spend more on schools if they wanted to.
So to get back on the beef train here, though, before we derail too far into policy specifics, you know, if you're a rapper and you're having a beef with somebody, you might just release a diss track or something.
Explain, a diss track.
A diss track is a track on which you diss somebody.
On the other rapper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually, or people in his crew, you know, stuff like that.
So you're saying that, like, Speaker Voss or Governor Evers are going to drop an album here?
No, but something the governor could do is maybe drop a veto.
That's a good point, and a good segue to our next topic. What could a governor do if he doesn't like what the legislature sends him in terms of a budget? Well, he could, okay, we've talked about this a few times, and he could, in theory, veto the whole thing. But here's something I learned just last week.
This is a fun fact.
I'm sort of ashamed that I didn't know this before, but I didn't. Since Wisconsin moved to an executive budget in 1931, that is a governor's, introduced by the governor as one budget bill, the Legislative Reference Bureau doesn't know of any outright veto of the whole budget. It's never happened. This is a thing that governors talk about but never do. So, I take stock of that and think maybe it's unlikely that Governor Evers would be the first ever governor in Wisconsin to veto an entire budget. What has kept governors from doing that? Arguably their strong partial veto power. You know, a governor in Wisconsin can strike out individual words or individual numbers to make the budget more to their liking. But they can't use that partial veto to put more money back into the budget. So that's a little bit tricky. And it puts Evers in a spot of, you know, what do you do? Do you take it out all outright and battle over this thing forever?
By or, battle, do you mean a rap battle?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I imagine them going to the Rotunda and... Yes, probably something like that. Probably one of the nonpartisan service agencies beatboxing in the background while they battle it out. But the range of options there is tricky for a governor.
Okay, so if the veto is, you know, the governor's way of releasing a proverbial diss track, what could Speaker Voss or Republicans do in a similar fashion?
Well, Speaker Voss is talking about maybe dropping another album, sort of. And let me explain. Right now, there is one budget bill. What Speaker Voss is considering is splitting the budget into two bills. Why would he do that? Here's why. The governor's partial veto power only kicks in for appropriations bills. So what Speaker Voss is talking about doing is splitting the budget out. You would have two bills. One would be just the appropriations, just the numbers. And then one would be all the language.
To sort of implement the numbers?
Yeah, so...
That sort of makes the numbers work?
The language is what makes it all work.
Yeah.
But the governor wouldn't be able to partially veto the language because there's no appropriation in that bill.
Essentially, they're just daring him to veto the whole thing, right?
A little bit, yeah. But so... Right now, a governor, even with this budget, using that partial veto pen, he could clean it up, take out some of the stuff he didn't like, and he wouldn't love the budget, but it could be palatable. A way for him to get out of there by using that partial veto pen. You split it out into two bills, and he doesn't have a partial veto pen anymore. At that point, he's basically got to do an up or down vote.
Yeah.
And or, you know, a veto or a sign. And that's a you've just said kind of you've made him less powerful.
Right. It's a way of taking away his power without taking away the power.
Yeah.
It's like if they had tried to change the governor's veto power in the lame duck session. It's sort of a way to change the governor's veto power without changing the governor's veto power.
Yeah. So usually in the budget process, the governor kind of holds all the cards because it starts with the governor and it ends with the governor. But if you kind of short circuit that system, maybe it's different.
And since we're in the land of wild speculation, I think it's important.
We're deep in that land.
We are deep in that land.
We took the beef train out to the land of speculation.
We've lost
we don't know what we're talking about anymore.
Station. We're just out in the wilderness somewhere. But I think it's important to mention that sort of the political calculus that would go into the governor vetoing the entire budget, if this is what happens, if it's two separate bills and he is forced to make an up or down decision, why that would be challenging for him. And I think the prospect of vetoing the entire budget could be especially troublesome to him, because vetoing the budget after it's sent to him, say in late June, if you go back to square one at that point with his veto, that's going to create some problems for schools, right?
Yeah, it would turn into a blame game over who's at fault here.
Yeah.
You also, if you're doing that, you end up vetoing stuff you like too. Like if you veto it outright, there's a bunch of stuff in there that's good that you as Governor Tony Evers would agree with. And it would potentially be used against him, let's say. Mm-hmm. So... yeah.
Sort of like the finger was pointed at Republicans for voting against all of those capital budget projects that were for research facilities and medical things and schools. And everybody's saying, oh, Republicans are voting against all of these good things that they've said they've supported in the past. It would be kind of a similar situation where people are saying, oh, the governor just vetoed a bill that would give money for, you know, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
The budget does a lot of stuff.
Now, this has never happened, and we don't know that it's going to happen for sure. It could just be kind of like one of those things that they're talking about to give themselves a little more leverage in negotiations, but they haven't done what Voss is talking about doing.
Real quick before we go, speaking of people we don't have a beef with, we want to give a quick podcast shout out to a fan who mailed us some DuckTales action figures because, you know, we did that podcast episode about lame ducks and used DuckTales.
Yeah, very maturely used the DuckTales theme. And got a personalized DuckTales action figure. Let's see, you were, which DuckTale were you, John?
I get Louie and Huey and
Dewey
confused. I believe it's Louie.
The one with the green shirt who's sarcastic, which is pretty good.
Like, your accessories were like a can of soda and a...
and a smartphone.
And a smartphone. That's yeah. good. That's like, yeah, if only it was LaCroix.
And Laurel is...
I'm Webby.
Webby. Right? And I am Launchpad McQuack, who who is like a total idiot, but he has a heart of gold. So I'll take it.
So I gotta tell you, I would not ride in an airplane with you, buddy.
I wouldn't either. You know, I started to tell my daughters about this because they love the reboot of DuckTales. And I got like 10 seconds through the story and they're like, where are the toys? Oh. they did not care that somebody did this for us. They were just like, where are these toys that them? You have no use for?
Uh-huh.
We would like to play with them. They're in the office, honeys. You'll never get to play with them.
We're keeping them in plastic.
We have them like collector nerds. They're still in the plastic up on display in the WPR newsroom.
We'll hoard them forever.
Yes. Sorry, Sean's daughters. But thank you, listener.
Anyway, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
If you know, you know. Whether you prefer the minimalist flow of Pusha T or the chart-topping rhymes of Drake, you can subscribe for new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast on iTunes. You can also find it on Google Play and Stitcher, as well as many other podcast apps, and you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics. Child rebel soldier, you ain't orphan enough. A rapper turned trapper can't morph into us. Well, why don't we talk about it? This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John Beef Wilson.
I'm Sean Beef Johnson.
I am not saying that.